The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So for this month on Monday evenings, I thought that I would explore some of what the Buddha had to say about relationship and how we work with relationship. This isn't a topic that we usually associate with the Buddha or the Buddhist teachings. I think we typically think of the meditation instructions, and that's very much how the teachings came to the West first, is through the teachings on meditation. And that we think of as becoming secluded and going inwards, and not so much about relationship. But as we look at what the Buddha actually taught, he actually had quite a bit to say about how we relate to the world and to other people, as well as how we relate to ourselves. So over these 4 weeks, I'd like to talk about this some of the ways that the Buddha talked about relationship. In his teachings on relationship, the Buddha actually talked quite a bit about lay practice, lay people and relationships, and he talked a lot about how to relate to your parents, to your spouse, to your children, to your employers, to your employees. He had quite a bit to say about this, and we can consider actually the path of our entire path of our practice to be one of looking at relationship, both our relationship to the world and our relationship to our inner life. And these two pieces are not separate. They really are interdependent. They depend on one another, and they inform one another. So that our relationships to the outer world, to people, to resources in the world, to animals, to all beings in the world, how we relate to those things reflects back on our inner life. And how we relate in our inner world, how we relate to ourselves and to our experience, informs and reflects back on how we relate to our relationships. So the two pieces work together. There's kind of a mutual interdependence between how we act in the world and how we are inside. One of the ways that the teachings are framed from the beginning of the first teachings that the Buddha gave through to the full teachings of liberation, there's a way of framing it called the gradual path of practice. And this begins with the teaching on dana, giving, generosity, that is usually one of the first teachings that he gave to lay people. That when he talked to lay people, that's one of the first things he talked about, cultivating generosity, giving. And then, moving on from there, he talked about living in harmony with people, our ethical conduct with our relationships. And then from there, he talked about cultivating our inner world, cultivating our minds. And in this cultivating of our minds, it includes, one of the first pieces includes a huge portion of relating to others, the teaching on the Brahmaviharas, the divine abidings. Brahmaviharas means divine abidings, and they are essentially a set of emotions or relations with people that support us as we move in this path of practice. And these are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And these are qualities of mind, but they also reflect how we relate to people. And then moving still further to the path and practice of meditation, of cultivating mindfulness and concentration. And that's where we really begin to look very deeply at our inner relationship, our relationship to our experience. And are we reacting to our experience with greed, aversion, delusion, or are we balanced and equanimous in our relationship to our experience? So over the next few weeks, I thought I would talk about some of these aspects. So tonight, starting with talking a little bit about dana, giving, and generosity. One of the places or times that I really have strongly connected with this aspect of the teaching of generosity is in the time that I have spent in Burma. In that country, a Buddhist country, this quality of generosity and the act of giving is so embedded in the culture that you cannot miss it. It is kind of part of the fabric of the whole culture. And one of the stories that I like to, one of the things that I like to recall that inspires me is a time when I was in a monastery. And I've been to Burma several times, I think 5 times now. And I often go and spend several months at a time in a monastery. One time I ordained as a nun and was the recipient of the generosity of the monastery. Anyone actually going to Burma to practice as a lay person or ordaining receives that generosity. But as a nun, I didn't get to experience the going on alms round. That is not something that nuns do. And it's something that a lot of my friends who are men who have gone and ordained really speak about the beauty of going on alms round and receiving from the people, the way the receiving is, the giving is done, the small children on the side of the road that are encouraged to offer a scoop of rice into the bowl of the monks. Well, on one trip to Burma at one monastery, they offered that anybody who wanted to could follow along on the alms round and watch, you know, basically to just be a part of that experience. And so I did that one time. And it was really quite amazing. The monastery was in a kind of a rural area, and we walked out of the monastery, and it's pretty much just all agricultural, all fields, and a small village nearby that everybody pretty much lived in bamboo shacks. And we took a tour through the village, and the road was lined with people. It was just packed with people waiting to offer to the monks as they came by. Old people, young people, children, all standing waiting to offer some of what they had to the monks. I don't know how many people lived in this village. You know, it didn't seem like a very large village, but there were easily several hundred people that were lined, or even more, you know, at least 400 or 500 people, I'd say, that were lined on the roads. And there was so much generosity coming from the village that they carried a wheelbarrow behind the monks with a big bowl. And after about halfway through, all the monks dumped their bowls into this big wheelbarrow, and then there was room in their bowls to receive more. And when we got back to the monastery, that big vat of rice, basically mostly it was rice that was offered. There were, like, most of the villagers, that was what they could offer was rice. But this big bowl of rice was then what fed the entire monastery. That was our rice for the day. And it was just so beautiful to see the expression on the faces of the people offering the food, the joy. It was apparent on their faces, the joy of giving. Some it looked like it was a real practice of concentration even. I saw just a total dedication to being completely mindful as they scooped their rice and put it into the bowl of the monk. It was very, very moving to see this. This kind of generosity is, it's hard to fathom, actually, in this culture. We don't really have that ingrained in the fabric of our culture. It's not so much part of our daily experience. Sometimes it is, but just the whole movement being one of generosity. So I want to talk some about this tonight. So the term dana, which is usually the term used, the Pali term dana, means giving. That's the outward act, the outward movement, the action in the world of offering. The term chaga is the inner quality that is cultivated. That's the generosity. Often people talk about dana as being generosity, but really it's dana is the giving aspect, the basically the practice of cultivating the inner quality of generosity. So the two are paired. And again, this is that outward and inward dimension. So the action of giving can cultivate this inner quality of generosity. So I like to sometimes think of the giving or the dana as being the practice and the generosity as being the aim of that practice. So practicing giving with the intention or the motivation of cultivating that inner quality of generosity. And this is really what the Buddha was aiming for. He wasn't particularly it wasn't so important to him what somebody gave or how much they gave. What was more important was that they were cultivating that inner quality. And there's one excerpt I'd like to read that talked about what this is, this quality of generosity. The accomplishment in generosity is what it's called. What is accomplishment in generosity? One dwells at home with a mind free from the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. So this is the quality. It's an inner quality that is cultivated through this practice of dana. So this practice of giving is, I think, one of the reasons it's the first practice taught is that it's the act of letting go. The act of giving cultivates that letting go, the letting go of what we have. And it starts, the practice of dana starts with letting go of more material things. And moves, and it can move towards letting go of less material things. So there's so many different kinds of things that can be offered. Often the first thing we think about with respect to dana or giving is financial offering. It's usually the thing, the emphasis that is placed on what is given. It's often talked about in terms of a monetary giving. But there's so many different things and qualities, actually, that we can give. So there's material things also that we can offer. And there is our service, our time that we can offer. This is a huge place where, I mean, this center would not run without the generous offering of the hundreds of volunteers. So service is a beautiful offering. Our conduct is also an offering. How we relate to people. There's one teaching that talks about the ethical conduct being one of the basically the practice of the five precepts of refraining from killing, refraining from stealing, refraining from lying, refraining from sexual misconduct, refraining from intoxication, that those are five gifts that we offer to the world. And sometimes it's said that someone who has that ethical conduct offers the gift of fearlessness. Kindness is another gift that we offer people. A simple smile walking on the road. I have experienced this, offering a smile and receiving back many times what it took to offer that by the joy and happiness that comes when I receive a smile in return. It's really quite an interesting practice. I really encourage this smiling practice. Taking a walk sometime and just, you know, you don't have to force it on people. I mean, I don't force myself on people when I smile, but if somebody makes eye contact, I smile, and most of the time, I get a smile back. And what I've been practicing with is recognizing or noticing how that makes me feel. You know, it feels pretty good to get a smile back. 30, 40 seconds of happiness for a smile. So really, I encourage this practice. It's a wonderful practice. Our being or our presence is another gift that we can give to people. Someone in pain, in emotional pain, needing some solace or comfort, our being willing to be present with their suffering is a huge gift. Our being able to be with people who are ill. Just this quality of being able to be present with suffering is quite an amazing gift to offer. And then one of the other gifts that's talked about is the gift of the teaching of Dharma. When we communicate something about the teaching, even in a simple way with somebody, just, you know, kind of framing something in impermanence or letting go. That is a gift also. And it is said that this gift, the gift of Dharma, excels all other gifts. So there's many, many different types of things that are offered. So it's not just financial. Our attitude when giving is probably the biggest thing that makes a difference in terms of whether the giving cultivates this inner quality of generosity or not. So how we relate to the act of giving. What is our intention when we're giving? There's so many different intentions that we can give with. The sutta actually lists some 8 or 9 reasons why we might give. And I'm not going to read them, but I'll just name a few. We might give because we're afraid. We might give because we've always given to this thing. You know, not particularly with thinking about it, but just like, oh, this is something my parents gave to, this is something I'll give to, kind of out of a tradition. We might give because we hope to get something in return. We might give because it's considered a good thing to do. We might give because we want to help people. We might give because it gladdens the mind. It creates joy in the mind to give. So what's most important is to, in a practice of giving is to not simply just go through the motions mechanically, but really to look at what's underneath. What's the motivation? What's the reason why we're giving? Now, we have mixed motivations often. That, you know, we do really want to help. We want to provide some support or service to someone, and we hope to get something in return. You know, so it's not going to always be completely pure. I mean, we are not pure. Our minds are not pure. We're going to have these mixed motivations. So this isn't a problem. But what it is helpful to, it's helpful to recognize when the motivations are mixed. And I find it helpful to kind of, as I notice mixed motivations, to kind of allow myself to weight a little more heavily, hopefully, on the more positive motivation. So if I see both the desire to help and the hoping to get something in return, kind of just allowing my mind to emphasize a little bit the wanting to help, kind of seeing if I can allow that to be where the motivation is more coming from. The teachings in the Buddhist teachings tell us that it's best to give without hoping for something in return. And this teaching goes very far in our practice. It's something that we have to learn over and over again in our own meditation. We have to give our effort to the practice without hoping for any results in return. This is something I'm sure most of you are familiar with. When we start to hope for some kind of, you know, if you have a good meditation sometime and then the next time you sit down, you start, wow, I want that back. You know, that wanting to construct something again, that intention of holding or trying to get something from our meditation gets in the way. So this practice of giving without hoping for something in return is a kind of a basic training for this letting go of results in the entire path of our meditation practice. So again, the teachings really kind of the teachings on giving will reflect into your meditation. If you observe your intention in your giving, you'll start to see how it reflects into your mind, your mind stream. There's one teaching that I like about giving with integrity. And this one, it's beautiful. It really talks about there's five qualities that are really supportive. And so I look at this as five trainings of how to give with integrity. It's phrased as a person with integrity gives in this way. But I also look at it as a way that we can aspire to give. So the teaching says, a person with integrity gives a gift with conviction or confidence. So a sense of, I look at this as being a kind of an inspiration, you know, gives a gift with the sense that this is going to be supportive of good in the world. Gives it a gift with attentiveness. So with mindfulness, paying attention to the giving itself. So many times I've seen myself kind of just mindlessly write out a check and not really think about what's happening here, that I'm offering something. So the giving attentively, paying attention actually to the fact that giving is happening. Giving at an appropriate time. And this is one where I look at it as being to look at when a gift is offered, is it an appropriate context or is it an appropriate time to give a gift to somebody? But the teachings actually give a list of good times to give. Giving a gift to somebody who comes, who's a newcomer, giving a gift to somebody who's going away, giving a gift to somebody who's ill, things like that. So the teachings actually give some specifics. Giving with an empathetic heart. So connecting to the person that you're giving to or the group that you're giving to. What is it that, so that there's a connection, what is it that you're supporting? How will it support them? And the last one, which I think is really interesting, is a person with integrity gives a gift without adversely affecting oneself or the other. So to be conscious of whether the giving is adversely affecting or impacting yourself, is it too much? Is it the wrong time? And being conscious of whether the gift is adversely affecting the other person as well. There's some additional teachings about this that, and I look at this as kind of how do we not adversely affect another with our gift? There are ways of giving that may be disrespectful. So giving with respect, with warmth, with friendship, with a true sense of connection, of relationship with the person that you're giving to. That enriches the relationship to have that sense of connection. If there's a sense of giving in a way that would make the person feel belittled or disrespected, that doesn't create or foster the sense of connection. The teachings also say, and I've gotten this from a kind of a second source. I was reading a book on Dana. And I cannot find the corroboration for this in the suttas, but it sounds like it's probably in the suttas, and the book was written as giving from the, you know, the book was written about what the Pali Canon has to say about giving. So it's probably in there, but I haven't found it myself. This one is also interesting. It is to give with your own hand, if possible, to actually make that connection with the person that you're giving to. That again, fosters the relationship. And this is definitely true in Burma, that the giving is done very face-to-face. You know, the person who's receiving knows who's giving the gift. In our culture, it seems that we like to give anonymously. We don't particularly like people to know that we've given. This has seemed to be a virtue, that we don't advertise the fact that we're generous. You know, that is, it's seen to be kind of self-aggrandizing if we advertise, oh, this is what I'm giving you this. But that attitude is something I think we can examine. You know, there are some parts of it that we have to take care with in this culture. But I think it also tends to have us get hidden about our giving. And we also don't tend to rejoice in the fact that we've given something or share our joy with others in the fact that we've given something. And all of these things are seen as being very wholesome and supportive of this quality of generosity. Now, I look at generosity as being the feeling that happens when we give with an open heart. When our hearts are open and we give something, there's a feeling inside. And I think we all know what that feeling is. That's the quality of generosity. And when we have that feeling when we give, it feels really good to give. That's actually one of the ways to practice with giving. It's to kind of check in and say, you know, where does it feel really good You know, how do I want to offer? And how does it make me feel? Can I give with an open heart and feel the quality of generosity? Tan Jeff, I'm sure most of you know who Tan Jeff is, says that the pleasure of giving is counterintuitive. Especially, you know, if you think of children, they kind of want to hoard things, you know. So from a young age, the pleasure of giving is not something that we typically think of. But Tan Jeff points out that when we give, we put ourselves in a position of wealth because there is a sense of having enough such that it can be shared. So this supports not only a sense of well-being, a sense of worth. It supports a sense of worth as a person to be able to offer something. It creates a good feeling in the mind to be able to give. It's also an interesting piece to look at how can we frame our actions as giving. So there's this one teaching that I'll just read this little piece from. Somebody was asking the Buddha and said, "I hear that your teaching says that you should only give to the monks." And the Buddha said, "No, that's not what I teach." And he goes on to say, "Even if one throws away the rinsings of a pot or cup into the village pool or pond, wishing that the living beings there may live on them, even this would be a source of merit, not to speak of giving gifts to human beings." So even if you're rinsing out your bowl and throwing the rinse waters away, if you think in your mind, may the beings in the pond be able to live on this food, that's a form of giving. Now, that's not something that we'd normally think about. You know, we normally think about, oh, that's just things being thrown away. So anytime there's an exchange, it can be interesting to think about, can this be seen as a form of giving? A friend, I was having dinner with some friends the other night, and one friend turned to me and said, "Have you ever thought of the fact that when you're at a restaurant and you pay your bill, that it's providing livelihood for the people in the restaurant?" He said, it just changed my whole way of relating to this when I thought about that aspect. Our culture has so many layers between, I mean, the monetary system puts so many layers between people in terms of the act of giving. But we can think about it as a sense being a gift when we go into a restaurant. It's a gift to the people who are there that we are supporting their livelihood, in a sense. So many gestures can be looked at in this way. Like, you're driving down a freeway and you see somebody with a turn signal trying to move into your lane. You might speed up so they don't cut in front of you, or you might ease off so that you can let them in. That can be looked at as an act of generosity, an act of giving. Thinking about it that way, framing it in those terms, helps to cultivate this quality of generosity in the mind. As we look at giving, as we think about giving, it really needs to be balanced with wisdom. We need to look at what our resources are. And again, you know, the wisdom, one of the wisdom pieces that is going back to that point about integrity, not giving such that it harms yourself. So using wisdom about how you give. The thing given or the amount given is much less important than the quality of the heart as we give. And the connection to, is this a true feeling and act of generosity? It's also, I think, helpful to think about our resources as a kind of flow through our lives, our financial resources as a flow through our lives, our time as a flow through our lives to direct towards what we want to nourish and support. An energy that will, that allows us to support the things that have meaning to us. So looking at your highest values and ideals, are the things, the way you offer your time, the way you offer your support, are they in line with your highest ideals? We can nourish and grow, support those things that have the most meaning to us, and I think find that our lives feel like they have more meaning as we direct our resources in a way that that supports those ideals. So can the flow of resources in our lives support our highest aspirations? The giving can have a kind of a ripple effect that can be quite amazing. Sometimes it's seen and known, and sometimes it's not. There's one story that I'll close with that is inspiring to me, and it kind of really shows this ripple effect. You know, essentially, when giving is done with a purity of heart, how it can ripple out into a wider field. This is another story from Burma. And there was there's a teacher, a Western Vipassana teacher named Stephen Smith, who was practicing in Burma. He was practicing in a cave in the Sagaing Hills, which is in Upper Burma. And he was meditating and sitting and walking, and he would go on alms rounds. And one day, this young woman offered him a can of Coke. And in Burma, the can of Coke at that time probably cost about a dollar. And she was about 16, working as a laborer, probably earning about 30 cents a day. This gift was 3 days' wages for her. And he knew how big of a gift this was. And he was so moved by that act of generosity that he felt inspired to give something back. So he ended up creating with a monk in the Sagaing Hills what he called the Metadana Project, which is a project that supported the village in which he was meditating and in which this young girl lived. So there's now a hospital and a school that isn't swept away by the floods. There's a road, a paved road, so that there's not dust continually in the village. And this young girl herself, that there's kind of was a relationship formed between Stephen Smith and this young woman. And she's now married and has a baby. And as she got married, Stephen and several others offered her money to build a house, her and her husband money to build a house. So this act of generosity, her offering a can of Coke, had ripple effects out into the entire village. The entire village benefited because of that act of generosity. Again, it comes back to the relationships between people and that field of purity of intention. So don't underestimate that power of generosity. So I see I've talked pretty much the whole time. So I'll just say a word to close. May the beneficial results of our practice be offered as a form of gift to support all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you for your attention.